What is interesting about this rebellion is that its objectives, capturing the seat of government and then negotiating concessions from a position of strength, were almost the same as the objectives of the Scottish Covenanters, with one enormous difference. The Irish were Catholic. And by this point, most Protestant Englishmen, which is most Englishmen, had an absolute horror of the Catholic Irish. Indeed, the Catholic Irish were regarded by many people in England as almost subhuman, certainly as barbarians. As the revolt spread throughout Ireland, the inevitable atrocities were committed on both sides, and in England, Protestant propaganda began painting a really horrifyingly exaggerated picture of the massacres of Protestant settlers, the killing of children, and really confirming every stereotype of bloodthirsty Catholicism that had been dear to the hearts of English Protestants. In fact, we know that the rumors that it was going to spread to Ireland, spread to England, there was going to be a secret rising of English Catholics, were spreading something like 50 miles a night by 1641, and Catholics were being rounded up by the thousands and arrested all over England. It was clear at this point that an army was going to have to be raised to put down the uprising in Ireland. But by now, many parliamentarians were really too afraid to entrust the army to Charles. So in the same way that fear had forced through this effort to kill the Earl of Strafford through an act of attainder, in the same way an almost panic-stricken fear of Catholicism, or popery as most Englishmen called it, this panic-stricken fear of Catholicism engendered by the Irish revolt now pushed the parliamentary leadership to take radical steps that they themselves would not even have contemplated a year earlier. On the 8th of November, 1641, John Pym secured a majority, it was a very slim majority, but a majority nonetheless, in the House of Commons, demanding that Charles, the king, should henceforth only employ those councillors who were approved by Parliament. That is to say, Parliament passed a bill demanding a parliamentary veto on royal councillors, an absolutely unprecedented step. Shortly thereafter, Pym and the parliamentary leaders now demanded control of the militia. So having first demanded control of the king's advisors, or at least veto power, they now demand power over the army itself. These demands were absolutely unconstitutional in English history, and Charles refused them point blank. Indeed, for a while, he actually managed to retain the support of the House of Lords. There was enormous fear engendered by the Irish revolt, but nevertheless, it's pretty clear that public opinion, or at least opinion of those who counted, was starting to swing back to Charles in Parliament. And indeed, debate was so bitter at some point that people were drawing swords on each other in the House of Commons. Charles was now able to pose fairly convincingly as the defender of order, of the fundamental laws against the parliamentary revolutionaries and religious radicals who would make unprecedented demands of the crown. But again, on the 10th of January, 1642, Charles undermined himself again. He clearly has a real knack for this. What he tried to do at this point was to arrest John Pym. He tried to have Pym and four other parliamentary leaders arrested directly in the House of Commons on charges of high treason. Again, the familiar pattern, nobody can keep a secret. The members of Parliament had been forewarned, and they had already fled. But the move was extremely unpopular. Angry crowds were now out in the street. They menaced Charles. He was embarrassed. He was also frightened. And he now left London. The attempted coup on Charles's part was really a grave mistake. It strengthened the hand of the parliamentary leaders, and it also, it seems to me, also reinforced their resolve to push through this radical program which had emerged in the last few months. In March of 1642, Parliament passed the Militia Ordinance, giving itself power over the militia, and even though this document wasn't signed by the king, Parliament declared that it was going to be law. By the summer of 1642, both the Crown and the Parliament had armies in the field. I think here, parenthetically, it's worth noting the striking similarity with developments in France during the French Wars of Religion, the so-called Days of the Barricades in Paris in 1588. We have the same context of a civil war against a hated and feared religious minority, a king whose allegiances to the dominant religion are suspect, attempts to use force against his aristocratic critics rather than compromise with them, and there ensues an enraged popular uprising, which drives the monarch from his capital, and as we're going to see, in both cases, it would ultimately cost the king his life.